Chairman, we can indeed still handle it. We would be able to keep the record such that we would be able to institute that when the member became 65. We indicated here, however, that if the subsidy is to continue, if it's your desire to continue the subsidy, then that really must be included in the legislation.
And that's the decision we have to make. The $60 subsidy started at $45 and began in the '80s, as I recall from the testimony. But it's not a requirement of the contract to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that it is. I think Bob Muir advised you at that meeting that we had that it was his opinion that it is a contract right?
For existing employees, okay?
Yes.
So it has to be prospective. And then the risk was, without the $60, would they still take the employer contribution or say, "No, actuarially, I want to stay in the system because the $60 makes a big difference in my plans." And if that's the case, then the employer loses because you have to continue to make the COLA payments, correct?
Correct.
Which long-term are more expensive than the $60 per month. So that's another issue that we'll have to decide.
Got the issues counted up?
I think I've got the issues counted up, and I'll come back with my recommendation next time we meet. Senator Brown.
Are we going to do a public hearing on the specific bills the chair's planning on moving so that folks that have concerns about them can express them?
You want to do that? Yes. We'll do this. My plan is next week to move the bill and incorporate what I think we should do. So what I'll do is I'll print what I think we should do and distribute it, and then offer your input, and we'll have a public hearing on it.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it might be at night. Yeah.
Doesn't what we're doing affect, doesn't mostly affect future?
Yes.
Employees?
Or prospective.
Yeah. So there wouldn't be anybody that could testify that this would affect because they're not employees yet.
Well, what the comment.
It's not a court proceeding. It's a public hearing. Right.
He will allow them to testify. Okay. Other questions on PERS?
Is it possibly a list of all the entities who had surpluses and who didn't, or is that too big of a list? How big of a list is that?
There's 465 or something like that in the system. And
of the unfunded liabilities or the surplus and for the surplus.
Yeah, I could
do that. Have that?
Yeah, we answered your question.
Yeah. Did Chief answer the question about the process, the procedure you're doing?
Kind of as far as how we're going to do it?
Well, like, you know, I don't know where the state treasurer is on this. I don't know where the governor is on this. I don't know what the authority is here. Is it a work group concept, or are we simply going to use another process or procedure? I sure don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to work with the stuff that I need. I will jump out that window if you put me in this work group. But is there just some dynamic? Could you help me with that? And
what I'm going to do is I'll draft up a bill and bring it back to the committee for discussion. And then after we discuss it, we'll schedule it for a public hearing on with the changes that the committee wants to make on it.
It's going to be a single bill then. You're not going with multiple bills. You're going with a single bill.
I think there'll be two bills. One will be Senate Bill 721, which
okay.
deals with legislators,
okay.
and one bill dealing with the other matters we discussed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this will happen next week.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll
conclude then the work session on the PERS bill and move on to our regular agenda as soon as I find it.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, future legislators.
Right.
They get calculated on what they actually earn rather than on their last 3 years of high school when they take a county commissioner job or port of Portland or something like that.
Yeah, I think we're okay. Where are you going to be if I need
to? Susan Costanza.
Okay.
I can move to 817 since it's sort of my bill.
We want to do that right now?
Why don't we do
817?
817.
We will now go into the work session on Senate Bill 817. And Aaron, tell us about the Dash 1 Amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Dash 1 Amendments before you in the packet significantly altered in the bill. In fact, it replaced the entire bill. Originally, the original bill created a system of appeals and review process of the court in adoptions after a parent's rights had been terminated. This rather scaled down the court's role from what was originally promised.
Substantially
from what was originally envisioned in the original bill, to where the court has more power during the concurrent plan phase to enter and review what the concurrent plan is for the placement of the child. Just some background, when a child, SDS gets involved in the case, there are two plans. There's a plan to return the child home and a concurrent plan, which if after 12 months efforts have not been sufficient to return the child home, then the agency moves towards termination. That's known as the concurrent plan. The Gashman Amendment allows the court to be more involved in reviewing the concurrent plan.
Senator Brown, what's the practical effect of this?
Mr. Chair, it basically gives the court a little bit more oomph in reviewing concurrent plans. This was the product of a work group. I see Nancy Miller, Timothy Travis, Kathy Ledesma, and Nikki Fuse-Logan here, and Mark Kramer, whose bill was at the request of, and did Richard Cohen participate in the work group? But Robin Tubb did, who does adoptions in the Portland area, and this is their product.
All right, discussions or questions concerning the Dash 1? Substantially toned down with the initial...
In fact, my understanding was the judges hated it, and it's now my understanding they're fine with it.
And
there was a huge fiscal.
Is there a huge fiscal now?
I understand there's approximately $40,000 fiscal. Originally, it was $400,000.
All right. So, assuming we're under the $40,000 or $50,000 mark, Senator Brown,
I move the
Dash
1
Amendments to Senate Bill 817. Discussion? Objection? Ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown moves Senate Bill 817 as amended before due pass. Discussion? Objection? Ordered. Senator Brown, would you carry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other bill that I think was on the agenda was Senate Bill 789, which is the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Enforcement Act, which all of my colleagues were delighted to hear about. We do not have the amendments back for the bill, and we're working very closely with Brad Frank to make sure that they are agreeable to the amendments and that it doesn't have a huge fiscal.
And when do you think those amendments might be back?
Mr. Chairman, I'd anticipate towards the end of next week. It could be scheduled.
Okay. Good. We need to schedule all of the Senate bills basically by the end of next week. That'll be our goal. So that would be good. Before you leave, Senator Brown, are there any other bills that you're involved with in work groups? Or?
No, but you may need my vote for Senate Bill 59.
All right.
You want to come find me?
Yeah, and okay. I have a question. I know Senate Bill 59 is the one that keeps returning. I have a question as we go through that, too. So we'll...
I know. You're right.
We'll now then go to Senate Bill 1207. And earlier we did a very brief hearing on this. I've invited Steve Dole to come forward. In town hall, if we could have him from
Florida. Michael Heimer from...
And Keith, right.
Mark Gardner from the Department of Justice. Michael Brown, lawyer from town. And this gentleman here.
Bert Andrews. Well, I'll just tell you. Do I need them all?
Well,
okay.
And Bert Kramer was looking at him.
Oh, Steve, you're back. If you'd come forward, please. And this is on, we're in work session on Senate Bill 1207.
In the Kelly Taylor ship in DMV.
Okay. We'll look from the same one as that. Good afternoon. If you could identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Gull. I'm president of Crime Victims United of Oregon. I would like to take a minute and introduce the gentleman to my left. This is Mr. Mike Stingen. Mike has some testimony he'd like to give this afternoon on behalf of Senate Bill 1207. And what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes and give a little bit of history on this thing and where we're at now and where we want to go with it, if I possibly could. As most of you know, and I won't go through the story, my daughter Lisa was murdered in 1992 as a result of the use of an automobile. And what we found out after that happened was the fact that in Oregon, the revocation of a license happened for 5 years after the date of conviction. And that applied to all forms of assault and all forms of homicide, be they criminally negligent homicide, manslaughter, or murder or aggravated murder. The question that came up by the district attorney was, well, there's a number of these people, especially people who commit homicides, who would still be in prison when they could virtually and theoretically reapply for a license. So what we did is we came in and tried to make some changes in 93 and weren't very successful, but we readdressed the bill in 1995. It became a Senate bill. It was originally House Bill 2479, and it came back as House Bill 3060 in the 95 session. What it ended up to be is that if you committed aggravated murder or manslaughter in the first degree, it was a 10-year sentence, or excuse me, a 10-year revocation, I'm sorry, from the date of release from prison. And you had to go back in front of the court and go through a procedure to get your license back. For second degree manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide, it became 8 years. But unfortunately, and I take responsibility for this for my part in it, I didn't realize that the original five-year bill, and I don't want to be too confusing with this, but the original five-year law, if you will, included all forms of assault.
I want to get something straight here.
Yeah.
All forms of assault, not necessarily assaults with automobiles.
No, we're talking about vehicular.
That's very important.
I'm sorry.
Since you've begun, because I remember you testifying over in that room, we did this because the weapon wasn't a gun or a knife or a fist. The weapon was the automobile.
Exactly.
It's very important that when we're talking about this, that this was only to apply to people who use an automobile to assault or kill somebody.
Exactly.
All right. Now, I want this, because this is very important to what we're doing, because we already have, thank you, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, thank you. I appreciate you making that clear. Because there was some discussion about that, which I'll lead into in a moment. Anyway, what I discovered last summer, in some cases that were brought forward, initially what I discovered was that in third-degree assaults, we had people getting disproportionate revocation times for the crime of third-degree assault with a motor vehicle. And I realized at that time, it goes back almost a year ago now, that we'd have to come into the 99 session and make some changes. So I had some language put together, and we came in with it. After that, I realized that we had also some problems around second-degree assaults. And that's where Mr. Stengen's story is going to come in. So we have put together a bill that basically changes the areas around second degree, third degree, and fourth degree assaults and turns them into suspensions so that you have the ability to apply for a hardship permit. Now, what it does is it allows for a second degree assault to apply for a hardship permit after 4 years. For a third degree, after 2 years, and for a fourth degree, after 6 months. It also addresses the issue of retroactivity, which was put into House Bill 3060. And it says in this bill that anyone who physically had their driver's license in their hand prior to the passage of House Bill 3060, or actually prior to when it was signed into law in September of 95, will receive their license back. Now, one of the things, and we were just in the hall, Mr. Taylor, discussing this, one of the proposals that I would like to make here today to amend this is the fact that we would make on the second page, on lines 6 through 30, where it concerns assaults, that we would make those also retroactive and put some language in that would do that. And we're going to have to come up, that's the concept basically, but we're going to have to draft some language that's very specific to that, because all it addresses in the back end of the bill is revocations and not suspensions. But we'll work, and if you want to call them, we've got Mr. Keith Meisenheimer today from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, who works primarily with vehicular homicides, that can address that. I guess I don't want to take a lot of your time, but, you know, we passed a bill I believe was a good piece of legislation. It had, as we have in the initiative system and as we sometimes have in the legislature here, it had some unintended consequences. We also had some situations with the enactment of the bill. I mean, this was a bill that was passed in 95. It was signed into law in September of 95. And it sat and really was not enacted until I questioned the DMV about what they were going to do about this bill and in January of this year, 3.5 years later, we start to put this thing into motion. And of course, it took a lot of people by surprise who had licenses. Anyway, that basically is my testimony. And the only change, there's some technical changes that need to be made to the bill, and Kelly Taylor from DMV has those. But the only change I'm would be asking for is under the assaults, that we make that portion of this retroactive. And there's a couple places in here where the word revoke needs to be changed to suspension. I think it's on line 20 and 26, I believe. But other than that, and I'd ask you to give some time to Mr. Stengen, if you would, Mr. Chair, and if you would hear his story.
I'd be happy to do that. And we'll have to bring this back with the amendments, and so we'll do that next week. Also, just for clarification, the technical changes, you have no objection to those that are proposed by the Department of Motor Vehicles. And when I read under on page 10, section 2, where it says retain employment, to me that would also include the education necessary to get the employment, and we might think about that as we work on the bill. Mr. Sarno.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Steve talks about retroactive. Steve, you talking about those individuals who are currently incarcerated from a prior conviction, who are in prison now, or how far back does retroactivity go, or?
Well, no, the bill from now on out, if somebody leaves prison tomorrow, and they had been in for
would include those previously
manslaughter two, or they're going to be under the 8-year law. Okay. They will still exist under that law.
It's the people that were, before the new law went into effect, had their license back, and some of them lost their license. Sure. That's who we're trying to treat fairly.
Yes, Senator Burke.
And just that, because there was a pretty well-publicized case, about the retroactivity, and that is what this is meant to address.
I have Mr. Stenson here today with me, and he'll be able to address that.
I need to jump ahead.
No, that's okay.
If you identify yourself, please do that. Mark Gardner, if you come forward, I know you have to leave at 4:30, and I know after we hear this testimony, you wanted to make the comments. So please go ahead.
Chair Bryant, members of the committee. My name is Mike Stenjum. I live at 18470 Southeast Woodcock in Milwaukee. I support Senate Bill 1207 as it's printed without any amendments right now. My accident was in November of 1990. As a result of drinking and poor decision making. I know the people that I hit and injured. I devastated their lives. I've paid the consequences for that. I pled guilty. I did not go through a lengthy court trial. I served my sentence. I no longer drink. I've been driving for the past 6 years, except for the last 3 months. I continue to work on my reformation. The justice system did its job. I've changed my ways. I make better decisions now. I have a wife and daughter, loved ones that I didn't have at the time of this accident. I have a career in telecommunications. It requires that I drive to and from job sites, a career that I may not have chosen had I known about this law and had I not had my license. But I had my license prior to September 9th, 1995. And decided to go into this career because I do like electronics. It's something I have abilities to do. House Bill 3060 had unintended effects, as Steve mentioned. With what's happened lately, I've gone to see a psychiatrist. I've been diagnosed with depression. It's been a real hardship on me. It's been a hardship on my wife to have to deal with the loss of a license after having it and depending on it and living a life with a license. What I would really like to see is Senate Bill 1207 expedited to get my life back to normal as quickly as possible and back the way it was. Things were going good for me. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
You'll be happy to know there is an emergency clause on this. So
I'm aware of that.
We go through the House and the Senate and the governor signs it, it'll become immediately the law.
I've been learning a lot about politics on the internet following the legislature and what's happening down here.
Senator Courtney.
Yeah, I just want to ask some personal questions. Were any deaths involved in the accident?
Senator Courtney, no, there were not.
Did you serve time?
Yes, I did.
Where did you serve time?
Pardon?
Where did you serve the time?
Oregon State Correctional Institute for 30 day to see how I reacted to prison, how I fit in, and the rest of the time was up at the Columbia River Correctional Institute. And
how long were you inside?
For nearly 2 years. For 21 months was a total sentence. I served 19 of those before I was released. I did go through a drug and alcohol program up at the Columbia River Correctional Institute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good question. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. I just want to ask you, how long were you driving with your license clean and sober before it was taken away?
My license was returned to me sometime in March of 93, and I'd been driving until January 26, 1999, when I got my revocation notice. I went and picked it up from the post office. And I contacted my employer immediately to inform them that I was not going to be able to drive. Fortunately, I work for a good company, and they are working with me. I have achieved the status of journeyman electrician, and they've assigned an apprentice to work with me who drives me around from job site to job site.
Mr. Gardner.
Chairman Bryan, members of the committee, my name is Mark Gardner. I'm special counsel to the Attorney General. We're here today to support Senate Bill 1207. We support it for the reason that as a result of the way the bill has been interpreted, there has been additional litigation that the Department of Justice is defending, And by passage of Senate Bill 1207, we will tend to moot out some of those cases and reduce costs in terms of attorney time and other expenses in defending the litigation. The issue in terms of what the policy should be in terms of the length of suspension or revocation that are in the bill, I'm not going to address because I think that's something that's outside of our purview in terms of telling you what those should be. However, we do support it for the reasons that I've mentioned, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Well, thank all of you for your testimony. We've had some others that have indicated they would like to testify. Let me, Kelly Taylor at the DMV will adopt your technical changes. So do you still feel the need to testify? For Kelly.
Getting a signal. We're getting a signal.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sally Taylor, Department of Transportation. Only in that I want to comment on the emergency clause and just talk reality on anything that we're changing as far as the assault 234 and a new suspension or whether we change it back from revocation suspension. There's really no way to just, as soon as the bill passes, have the programming done right that second. We can restore the privileges because we have programming today that exists to restore privileges for anybody that, you know, you want it back, by the way, but I can't instantaneously have programming done the day the bill passes. So I don't want people to have expectations that all of the bill would be in the moment it passed.
Well, you can kind of anticipate it will probably be there, and I think we're only...
And we'll work at it. I just don't know when it will pass and that we'll have it done the second that it's passed.
Right. We'll probably have the estimate with 40 to 50 of people's licenses. This would immediately impact.
It's just assault 234, Mr. Chair. It's not the retroactivity and the restoring. That I can do instantaneously. It's just the 234, the changes to assault 234. That's the piece that takes new programming that, you know, I'm just, want to make sure.
All right. That's appreciate it.
You bet.
If you could give your technical changes to Mr. Taylor, we'll make sure.
You're working with him. You bet.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to thank you for the time today, and I wanted to please the committee understand that I find myself in an odd position on this. I am trying to do the right thing, and the thing I think we can all take from this is, as I told Kelly Taylor, I'll stick to victims' rights after this, and I'll never darken the door of the DMV again. However, it does concern me that when we get legislation out of here, I hope in the future that we can make sure that when it's been signed by the governor that it gets put into practice so we don't have a 3.5 year lapse so we have these situations happen. But thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Mike Brown and Jeff Kleiner. I don't know if the amendments we talked about satisfy your problem or not, but Thank you. Were there any others that wanted to offer comments on this particular bill? Yes. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Kleiner. I also have a letter that I'll provide to the committee from Attorney Stephen House, also on these same issues, and we'll include it in file.
I have two of those letters already in my file.
Okay, good. Maybe we already have. Does everyone have those letters?
Yeah.
I think I probably do. I got a lot of letters and phone calls.
I would like to just ask if Mr. Brown is here. I'd just like to know that, because Mr. House mentioned Mr. Brown's amendments, and I would like to get some sense of what you meant when you said that his comments were fine.
Michael Brown, Salem, Oregon. I have two constitutional concerns. The amendments that are proposed, and as I understand them, are going to address the proportionality problems. There is still an ex post facto problem that gets taken care of by the proportionality problems of allowing people to get reinstated. And the math on that takes care of a number of people, including a client I represented, Mr. Kleiner's son. Whether there are some people that, because of when it falls in with their revocations, whether they're still left retroactively revoked, I don't know how many are there or if there are any. But it does take care of the proportionality so that Mr. Kleiner's son can simply get reinstated now.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted a little clarification. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate everyone's work on that, and it's I think it's a good correction to the law that will add and fairness to our system. That will close and end the public hearing on 1207. We'll bring it back next week when the amendments are ready. And we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 320. Mr. Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 320 modifies provisions relating to length of time a person subject to extradition will be held in jail. You have your Dash 1 amendment. Jeff Brown is here from the governor's office, legal counsel staff, and if you need further information, but the Dash 1 amendments are in front of you. They make, I believe, these are consensus amendments that they worked out with the court administrator's office and the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association.
I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 320.
Thank you. Senator Courtney moves the Dash 1 amendment, Senate Bill 320. Discussion? Objection? Order.
All right, we'll Senate Bill 320 the amendment before due pass recommendation.
Thank you. The Bill 320 has been moved as amended to the floor due pass. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Thank you. Senator Courtney will carry. We'll now go to Senate Bill 844.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill comes to you from Senator Peter Courtney. It increases the penalty for disorderly conduct for Class B misdemeanors. The Class A misdemeanor is disorderly conduct takes place on a school property in a school zone. And when I'm talking to the bill, I'm talking to the Dash 2 amendments. And if a person was notified by a school employer or a law enforcement officer that the school's person's conduct is causing public inconvenience and annoyance or alarm, that language comes from the disorderly conduct statute, Mr. Chairman of the committee. Defines school zone as an area within 1,000 feet of a public or private elementary school or secondary school. What would happen, Mr. Chairman of the committee, if even without the notice, you could still charge a person with disorderly conduct? What would happen is that if it was inside the school or in a school zone, if the school employee went up or a police official went up and said, you're being disorderly, you're causing public inconvenience, and you did not desist in your conduct, you didn't stop your conduct, they could charge you with a class A misdemeanor instead of a B.
I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 844, and did I look at Senator Q-Tub, who's got a pretty one like that?
I second it, Mr. Chairman.
I don't know what she's doing. Okay. I'm sorry. You must not hear it in here. The principal notice from high school came to me and said, I live alone there. They had sex offenders who come into North Carolina High School, or gangbangers, and they were trespassing, and they go right stand right outside the front door of the school. And then, and they really were having a problem. So I heard, he said he heard, that Georgia had a statute. So I had the Georgia statute looked at, and we found out that it was unconstitutional.
That's even right, I remember.
And so that's what this is all about. It's okay. Computer telling me it's crazy.
Sorry.
Not. I'm just, this is what we're trying to do to respond to that one. Is it okay?
Yeah, so if people don't get a $5,000 fine for chewing gum.
It has to be disorderly conduct.
No,
and we have a definition for disorderly
right.
conduct. Yeah, I wasn't talking like that.
And you have to be warned. and you have to be warned, and if you don't leave, what it does is it elevates it from a Class B to a Class A and puts a little more teeth in it.
I move Senate Bill. Did that pass?
No. We were having discussion on the Dash 2 amendment.
I moved it.
You did move it. Other discussion on the Dash 2s? Objection?
I move Senate Bill 844 as amended to the due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves his bill. 844 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection?
Yeah, the principal's
going to carry
the bill, but I don't think that's the
principal. I'll carry it then. I want a chariot.
So you really would love it. You want a chariot, I know. So good for
I'll tell you what, I never seen Doug here. Yes, first of all, night discussion at 8:30. I'll carry it at 8:30. That way, I'll take care of what is being said with her body language. No press will be in the building. You'll be too late for any news program. How about that?
Well, what happens, you know, at 8:30 at night when the North End Rally Squad shows up and the extend courtesies in the balcony.
Right.
All right. We'll now go into work session on Senate Bill 66.
Do we have a carrier, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I think it's Senator Courtney.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Another photo opportunity.
Do you?
Senate Bill 66, and it's Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have a huge set of amendments in front of you, the Dash 1 amendments. Ann Christian is here from the Court Administrator's Office concerning any questions, and what this does is creates the Indian Defense Commission. The Chief Justice will appoint the commission members as part of the judicial branch of government, and the bill is brought to us by the Court Administrator's Office, the Chief Justice.
This one will go down to Ways and Means because it will have a financial impact of about $200,000. If you recall, the court testified that they feel that they're in a conflict when the presiding judge has to review and approve Indian defense requests for costs. The Defenders Association objected because they don't want to be an orphan out there on Indian defense. The chair's position is, I don't think they will be an orphan. You have to provide Indian defense. They do a good job. And this commission will solve what the court believes is the problem. So the chair would move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 66. So discussion, objection, so on. The chair then would move that Senate Bill 66 be referred to Ways and Means with a two-path recommendation as amended. Discussion, objection, so ordered. Okay, we'll now go into a work session on Senate Bill 345.
Chair, members of the committee, this bill comes to us from the DPST relating to public safety. Replaces lists of various occupations with term of public safety personnel or public safety office of statute dealing with Board of Public Safety Standards and Training and Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. You have two sets of amendments in front of you, the Dash 3 and the Dash 2. They both come from the DPSST. The first one allows DPSST to charge a fee when their employees are called as expert witnesses, Mr. Chair. The state police got this provision about 5 years ago because their people were being called as expert witnesses in civil cases, and they were being paid just a witness fee. And they're being called for accident reconstruction and...
And we also have a hand and growth bill.
Right.
That's correct.
You want to move from Dash 1 amendment?
Wait. I have a question about the Dash 3, but are we going to move
on? We'll do the Dash 1 first, and, and then we'll go into the Dash 3.
I move Dash 1 to Senate Bill, Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 345.
It's been moved to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 345. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Cutub, concerning the Dash 3.
Bill, what does the Dash 3 amendment do to the private prison bill that I have and what we've asked this department to do with regard to that?
Chair, members of the committee, Senator Cutub, I don't believe it does anything, but I would suggest that you have Diane Middle come up. These are amendments that they have worked out with, I believe, the law enforcement community, and I think they pertain to the issue of training for law enforcement in institutions other than the academy. But I think they could address that more fully. I frankly have to admit, I didn't think of it in the context of private prison providers.
I think it does affect
But it would be best that they address the issue.
Kevin, if you'd come forward, please.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cutub, the
purpose of the Dasbury amendments were to do two things. First of all, it was to eliminate a concept that was in the original bill that dealt with the idea of self-sponsorship. I think the second area is the one you have a concern about, and that is that we're looking for partnerships with community colleges and universities. And we believe that that kind of cooperative effort should involve educational opportunities as they relate to law enforcement. But we also have skill training needs, EVOC training, firearm training, those trainings that we believe really should be provided by a law enforcement official as opposed to the community college itself. And so this basically says that that kind of training will not be done by the community college itself. It will be done through a law enforcement official. And Diane may be able to clarify, there is obviously no intention to impact your bill at all. We don't believe it does, but that was our intent. And this was an amendment that was reached as an agreement so all parties could be on board with Senate Bill 345, which we believe is a critical bill for the future of our law enforcement training delivery in the state. It's a big priority for the chiefs of police in the state. And so I hope that answers your question. I don't want to screw around it. I don't believe it impacts your bill, but...
And if it did, we could do a conflict amendment on the prison bill to make sure it did.
Yeah, it's not our intention.
That was not the intention.
Mr. Chair, Kevin and Diane, correct me if I'm wrong, we have a need for training in especially the eastern part of the state when we have the St. Louis prison facility over there. We're training new correction staff. And then go to our local community colleges there and get accredited. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Tarno, we continue to be able to do that kind of training. There is a little mistake that was found in the Dash 3 amendments. It's a minor one. It's simply a misspelling. In line 5 of the third Dash 3, at the end of the line, the word private is there. It should be public. And, Mr. Chair, we are flexible regarding your desire to send it forward. Whatever you would like to do, it's a spelling error.
Conceptual,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we did this yesterday, Bill.
Should I leave the room?
Leave the room.
Okay, I'll come back.
Okay. So on what community colleges can do, though, they can still train correctional officers, correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
As they do now. But it will open up the partnership.
Pardon?
Mr. Chair, it will open up the partnerships and allow us to kind of audit some of their corrections classes and give them actual credit for them as we get into giving credit for basic police through certain courses.
So it would, if you were a prison guard and wanted to corrections officer and then took these courses at community college, you'd get some credit towards your basic police training if the curriculum was right at the community college when you moved into the other area of law enforcement. Is that the idea?
It's true. That's basically the idea. We also have provisions that we test to make sure they actually learn the material, but yes, that's what it does. It hopefully allows for that to happen.
You mean you test?
We do test.
Yes. All right.
Thank you.
Other questions? Then the chair would move for that typographical correction on line 5. And we'll suspend the rules to... the chair moves to suspend the rules to do this. Is there objection? The chair then moves that on line 5, private becomes public of the Dash 3 amendment. Objection? The chair then would then move the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 345 as amended. Discussion? Objection? Ordered. Chair then would move Senate Bill 345 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Ordered. Carrier, please.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Appreciate it.
Right. Okay, and then
we can get in there.
Okay. Okay. We'll now go into the work session on Senate Bill 59.
Chair, members of the committee, this Senate Bill 59, this original bill was brought to us by the Court Administrator's Department, Division, whatever, and it We adopted some time ago the Dash 3 amendments, which relate to guns and courthouses to the bill. We now have before us the Dash 12 amendments, which relate to firearms in buses and mass transit vehicles. Excuse me. And you may remember in our last hearing we had the Dash 11 amendments, but there was an error in them, and that relates to possessing a person who possesses a firearm while on a mass transit vehicle, comma, other than a school bus, if the person does not possess any firearm ammunition, if the person is, et cetera. The addition is other than a school bus. There's within the bill an exemption for carrying a firearm on a mass transit vehicle if it's in a case and you don't have ammunition. That does not apply to a school bus. So it's an exception to the exception.
But if you had a concealed gun permit, you could carry the gun on a school bus, correct?
The chair, members of the committee, the only place where you cannot carry a firearm with a concealed weapons permit now and after this bill will be in the courthouse.
Correct.
The way I read the statute.
And in the floor of the Senate and the House because of the rule adopted in the Senate and the House. I just learned that. This
okay, week. Mr. Murphy.
Now, what is the penalty for someone who violates the law as it relates to public transportation?
Chairman of the committee, I believe would be under the... I have to look at it.
The reason I ask is, here's my concern. Earlier we had the testimony about the federal law, and if you violate it in a certain way, you're getting and I didn't want to expand as far as the penalty is concerned to fall into that federal trap. So if someone made a mistake on public transportation and
didn't know about the law, brought the ammunition, it's a Class B felony.
Chairman of the committee, I would address your attention to page 2 of the bill, section 2. Any person who intentionally possesses a loaded or unloaded firearm and any other instrument while in a public building and then we're having mass transit vehicles, shall upon conviction be guilty of a Class C felony. So it is put within the that particular definition. So it would be a Class C felony.
All right, here's my dilemma as I'm older, and I know back and forth several times. For someone who mistakenly, after the bill is passed, violates that on a bus, I wouldn't want them to lose their right to go hunting later on. And so what I'm thinking, and Ms. Taylor, you might have an answer because I don't, if that happened and we made that a misdemeanor, a Class A misdemeanor, would it still have the same triggering effect on the federal statute?
Chairman of the committee, the only place I believe that the prohibition for carrying a firearm with a misdemeanor was the domestic relations issue involved.
So
if you have to have a domestic relations assault on the bus at the same time. So I think otherwise you'd be okay. What we would probably have to do, it may make sense, is to create a whole new section here, Mr. Chairman of the committee, because the whole bill is based around, current law is based around public building and the Class C felony exemptions.
I have no trouble keeping a Class C felony in a courthouse. It's posted at the beginning if you walk in. Most of them now have metal detectors and a sheriff's officer there. But I am concerned about making that a Class C felony on a bus the first time. That's my concern. Senator Burr.
Mr. Chairman, the intent here was to keep it consistent with public buildings, and public buildings are not posted, typically, at least not that I'm aware of.
But I know a courthouse is.
Courthouse is, but that's the place where you can't even take a concealed weapon, and that's the reason for the posting. But any public building, although you could take a concealed weapons permit as you would be able to on a bus, the purpose here was to make buses defined in the same way as a public building.
I understand the purpose, but I'm concerned by the penalty. So that's my dilemma. Other comments, Mr. Carmen?
Well, I think that it's a valid point, Mr. Chair. Class A should suffice, I would think. It wouldn't prevent a person from being able to go hunting that way. I'm pretty sure.
It still has the same detrimental effect.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, my thought. Mr. Chairman, maybe we have Bernie Bottomley here from TriNet, and would it be possible to have him talk about the posting issue?
Mr. Bottomley.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bernie Bottomley. So I'm trying that just as I was listening to the conversation. We do post on the buses and in the light rail trains various rules, and we also make those available in flyers that are kept on racks in the buses and on the light rail trains. So if this were to pass, we could add that to the list of things that are not allowed and that we post on the vehicle.
I would hope you would post if it was passed and even if it was a misdemeanor, because I think it's important to give that notice. And I would certainly hope that people wouldn't bring a loaded gun on the transportation. But what I'm concerned about is the collateral issue, the federal statute, whereas if they violated this and it was a felony that they were charged and convicted with, they'd lose their right to go hunting 10 years later. And that is unfortunate that Congress imposed that, but it's there, and we have to deal with it. And that's what gives the chair to Harvard. So in my thinking, I think we can create the same effect we're after and give you the relief without making it a Class B felony. And certainly if the person who had the loaded gun did anything inappropriate as far subject to much, much more serious offenses, that would be available too. So that's my thinking of it. So I don't think I want to move the bill out of it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just one comment. The Class A misdemeanor is $1,000 fine or 1 year of even county jail, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that puts a jacket on a person as far as any kind of previous and subsequent convictions for this thing. And I think that's the fine.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question? If you did go that route, and Bernie, I wanted you to comment on this as well, or at least be available. If we were to make it a Class A misdemeanor, I'm just wondering if it would be appropriate to have maybe a second and subsequent be a Class C felony. So
that's
if you
fine.
Had somebody
if it happened twice, my reason, my concern disappears.
Okay.
And as practical matter. You might be doing more time if you got convicted of a Class C in the county than you would have seen those in the jail. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Committee, we are.
Be at 5 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working on the 3rd floor.
How many of them are back?